This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. Another week and another podcast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM, our good friends out in Coquitlam. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, be sure to start your search at eagleridgegm.com. Check them out online, or you know, if you want to see and touch and feel the vehicles in the showroom and on the lot as well, you can find them 2595 Barnett Highway, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center. Botch, we don't always get bounces in this business, but we got a big old bounce today with the news that the Canucks have a new head coach. He'll be introduced tomorrow. I remember doing a podcast back early in the season. You and I, we went deep on Jake Virtanen. Like, we couldn't, we exhausted ourselves talking about Jake Virtanen. We finished, we both checked our phones. Oh, the Canucks have sent Virtanen to Utica. And basically rendered that podcast useless. So instead of, you know, planning to do this tomorrow and then finding out that, we can't do it tomorrow because they're announcing this coach and we got to scramble, we get a day to digest it all. But Travis Green is the new head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Surprise, surprise.
Well, in the great lore of the podcast, one of the things that people often clamor for is the emergency, the podcast. And I think it would have been very difficult for us to ignore this news. Like, if this happened and we weren't here today as scheduled, we were scheduled, and we didn't host an emergency the podcast,
right,
I don't think we ever could have said. It's like the Canucks front office and saying at the beginning of the year, we're going to try to make the playoffs or be competitive for them. Like, after this past season, they've lost that. No, they can no longer start another fall saying the winning starts now. This team isn't about development. This team is about winning. This team is about challenging for a play. You've lost that ability. And I think if we miss today, because a lot of people were demanding a podcast when the Trampkin news dropped, and we were actually both filling in co-hosting on that day, but not together. And I do think that Trampkin has a special relationship with the podcast that kind of demanded an emergency, but got away with that one. I don't think we would have got away with this one.
No, and I've heard from a lot of people as well. We have failed the people. Like, you're right. I mean, we talked about this.
The Trampkin one, I was super disappointed.
No, and let's be honest. Like, we're recording today's podcast under the pall of gray skies. Our muse, like, we got more mileage out of Nikita Trampkin than any other player on that Canuck roster all season long. And I got people in my timeline accusing us of being we put too much pressure. We put too much pressure on him to speak English, to learn the language. We are demanding. Because people have asked me, when are you guys going to get a guest? And I've always said, like, where we spent much of the season talking about the Canucks lowering the bar.
Right.
At the podcast, we raised the bar. And we were never going to bring a guest on until we could get Nikita Trampkin as our first guest. That was just going to be an epic podcast that would have, like, taken the world by storm. Now, we know what's happened here. We'll get back to Trampkin because
you don't want to wrap him up right now? Get him out of the way?
Okay, we can go there then. Let's do that.
Let's wrap Trampkin up
because, fair enough.
I think I've kind of got the gist of where I'm not sure actually where you stand on that. Obviously, I've made my position very clear. Like, I do think obviously some of it is on him. I do think that he was let down by the organization. I do think he was really unhappy. And I've had that confirmed in other places that he was unhappy with the way things are going, the communication lines. There was some stuff with him and the coaching staff that were really weird and odd, and if true, that went down. And I honestly believe that if things were done differently, they could have kept them. And the organization, I know a lot of people are going along the lines of what the Canucks said, hey, it's just family. That's the whole reason he went. But if it were other things, the front office would never cop to those other things. And Trampkin did multiple interviews, you know, on the day of as this all broke. And he did have a list of grievances of things he was willing to talk about openly. And what I would suggest to you is that if those are the things he's willing to talk about, were there other things also happening that he wasn't willing to talk about? And the one last point I would want to make is on the 2-year offer, because this was used as, hey, we did everything we could. And, you know, there were media that had talked to the front office and said they even offered him a 2-year deal.
Generous, I believe.
Right. Okay, so I asked the Canucks. I said, what does that mean? Is that Ben Hutton generous? Like, were you offering? Because to me, if you want to keep Trampkin and you want to keep him happy and you know that he's unhappy and you know that he has this leverage of going back to Russia, you better be in the Ben Hutton ballpark. And they said, no, it wasn't close to Ben Hutton, but it was with his comparables. Okay, so, and Ben Hutton had a lot more points and all of that, so he didn't qualify for the Ben Hutton $2.8 million a year offer. So his comparables are about one for his level of experience, the amount of minutes he was playing, and the number of points he was getting. His comparable is about $1.6 million a year. So on the top end of that, I theorize that their 2-year offer was for $1.75 million a year, which is not enough, I don't think, to convince a guy who's been unhappy, who feels in certain situations was treated unfairly, from going back home and getting whatever he can get in the K, which is may not be 1.75, but it's not that far off. So that's my track.
My issues there were, one, in the interviews he did in Russia, he talked about 12 minutes a game. There were a couple games early on where it was that, but his ice time was higher than 12.
Okay, but I think if you read when he mentions the 12, what he was saying was that in some games, he got limited to 12 minutes, and he didn't understand why, in those games of the 6 defensemen, he was the guy getting benched late in the game as Willie squished his bench to a 5-man D.
And he's not wrong if he's looking out there and seeing Lucas Pisa log luxurious minutes and thinking, hey, I'm better than this guy. Like, so I get that part of it. But if he's trying to convince the Russians and the people that he's talking to that, you know, oh, I was only playing 12 minutes a game over there, hopefully they're doing a little bit more research and realizing that there were games that he was up closer to 20 minutes. And again, like, anybody that's listening to the podcast knows that we have a very soft spot for Nikita Trampkin. Like, I'm disappointed on many levels. I'm disappointed on the podcast level. I'm disappointed because I wanted to see this guy. But it was such a crappy season for the Canucks that most nights when I left Rogers Arena, when I'd done my work and I'm walking out the door and I kind of think, all right, what was the story of that game? Like, memories of something that Trampkin had done that night, you know, come rushing back to me. Like, I would try to block out what so many other guys had done that night, but there was almost always a takeaway from Trampkin, and he's just kind of teasing you at 22. Like, you just wanted to see so much more, and it's a massive blow to the Canucks. There's no question. They can downplay it and say, we've got other guys that can fill that role. Again, he was just getting started. He was so unlike anything else that they had, anything unlike they ever really have had in the organization. So, you know, it's a massive blow, and it's a huge disappointment. But when I look at the story as a whole, and I hear where you're coming from, and you know, if that's true about the numbers, then that's not generous. Those are not generous numbers. It is weird, though, this disconnect, because if it was the coaches have been blown out of here. And, like, Doug Lister spent so much time, and you saw it, too, like, after practice working with this guy.
I hear that those times together were not great between the two.
And that's fair enough. I mean, a lot of times he was out there by himself being bag skated when nobody else was, and clearly he didn't dig that so much. But it wasn't like the coaches abandoned him. I haven't spoken to Trampkin. I don't know truly what the disconnect was with the coaching staff. I just wish that he would have looked big picture here and said, all right, the guys that I had a bit of a problem with, they're gone. New coach coming in, you know, hopefully a clean slate. But maybe he looks at it and says it was with management, upper management, issues, that I, you know, the trust issue is still in place. So
definitely both. And one of the other things that I asked about was that this whole, like, we want him to play like Chris Pronger. We showed him Chris Pronger video. And I said, well, like, what was his reaction? Like, when you were asking him to play like that, and their response was, well, what he said was, like, he didn't really want to play that way because he didn't want to hurt. He wanted to take a penalty and hurt the team, which is not wrong. Like, he took 27 minors in 66 games. No one else on the team had more than 18. And it did seem that he rarely got the benefit of the doubt with the officials. And apparently that there's one, I haven't gone back and looked at it yet, just because there's been other stuff going on, but there's a penalty he took, like, in that one of the last Oilers games when he was super physical in that game. There was a penalty he took there that didn't make any sense. He couldn't understand why he was penalized. And that's one of the things that he was hesitant on playing this super aggressive, even if you're going to use Pronger's name, dirty style, was that he did not want to be in the box and hurt the team. And on that, he's not wrong.
It's funny, and I can't recall that penalty off top of my head, but I remember there were other penalties. There was one, I think it was the New Year's Eve game in Edmonton, where, you know, total reputation call. He made a great defensive play on Connor McDavid, basically reaches around, pokes the puck away. McDavid gets the call there. He goes to the penalty box. I could understand that kind of call too, where, and that's got to be difficult for him. You know, he can't really converse with the officials. It's tough for him to get an explanation. And it's not like, I mean, again, communication was an issue. There's no question. But I do think as the season went on, his communication got better. Willie told us all the time that, you know, he could understand about 75% of what they were saying. And if nothing else, Botch, you and I will always have the memory of that day in the locker room. I don't care how long I'm on this job. I will never see another day like that. And you remember it clear as day as I do. It was like, and we're not, we talked about it on a podcast, but like, we're not exaggerating. It was like going to the Department of Motor Vehicles or an immigration office, like where you take a number for your turn and you wait your turn. But you remember, like, the Canucks staffers were lined up around the corner and he was just holding court in his stall. And they, like, people were, like, doubled over laughing.
Right.
Like, the jokes.
And watching from afar. Like, I was filled with envy. Because I wanted to be in, it's not often that I see a Canuck player, anyone, like, you know, telling jokes or having some kind of inside conversation where I think, oh man, I wish I was a part of that. Like, I got my own thing going. I don't. But watching that, that was one of the few times that I thought, like, I want to be this guy's friend. Like, I want to be hanging out with this guy. And part of that procession where guys are, like, high-fiving them, their big, huge belly. Like, I wanted a Trampkin belly laugh. Like, I wanted to hear one of those, like, great jokes from him.
And it was bizarre because it was, like, people in hockey operations, but then it was people in the communications department, and then somebody from catering stopped by, and I think one of, like, the maintenance guys, and, like, it didn't matter. We missed out that. There's a story that was never told there. It was unbelievable, and it didn't end. Like, it was one after the other after the other.
Yeah, I do, like, everything that I've kind of gleaned and asking people about him, and you know, kind of through this process after he decided to exit stage left and take off. Like, he's got a great personality. There is some charisma there. We saw it there that day. We've seen it other times. And he's a thoughtful, smart guy. And I think that a lot of times that was reflected on the ice. Like, if someone went down, he would be the first guy there, right? And he'd always be helping someone limp off the ice.
Yeah, the trainer out, drag the trainer over.
And it was all legit. Like, he wasn't putting on a show for anyone. He wasn't, you know, showing his teammates, like, this is, I'm going to pretend to be this. Like, that was just who he is and who he was. And, you know, his questions about the lineup and his questions of, like, he makes good points that in a way that I haven't seen a lot of hockey players make those same points. Maybe they're thinking similar things. But the way he, in such detail, is describing, I don't understand why this happened. I don't understand why Willie did this. And I don't even, like, he didn't play the first 10 games. And in one of the interviews, he said, I understood the first five because I was still, like, you know, still getting into that peak NHL shape. But after that, the second five, I have no idea why, because I was ready to play. And he didn't say this, but what he's really suggesting, I think I asked him about it with the translator one time, was in those last five games, he saw himself as good as any top six guy they had playing, better than some. And he saw himself as he should have been in the lineup. Caring, confident, funny. He's the full package, man. Like, I want to be that guy's friend. I want to.
He's coming back, though. We'll see him again. We'll see him again at some point. I mean, I think some of it is growing up, and some of it is, you know, I don't know how much of it was the wife and her influence, whatever. My gut tells me that he'll go over there. He'll realize that the KHL, you know, he's been there. He's done that, that there are millions to be made. I think he'll come back. And, you know, I saw a lot of people say, like, Yeah, he's just getting out of Dodge here until the Canucks get this thing sorted out, figured out. And, you know, once they get it moving in the right direction, oh, look, here comes 88 with the cape on, you know, just wants to air, drop right in there and he'll be the star. But it would be fascinating. And again, like, I was blown away and it spoke to sort of the quietness in the market right now. There wasn't a whole lot going on last week. So there was timing. But again, for a guy that, you know, didn't connect with the fan base through the media, we never spoke to him, made this massive impression. Like, people were crushed, and they felt something. You know, I guess I made the point that, you know, he was a rare win for the Canucks. In two seasons of so much losing, you know, he was a mid-round draft pick that they were able to convince to come over here, plug him in, and eventually when he got in, he played and, again, gave people this sense of, this guy's going to be here, he's going to be good, and he's going to be here for a while. And then he bolts in the cover of darkness. And but I was blown away by the fan reaction to, like, if you go up and down the Canuck roster watch from this past year, 18 guys announced they're leaving. People aren't batting an eye. There's about three guys, and he's one of them.
Right.
And people were freaking out.
No, and it shows you that, players don't have to be great with the media. I mean, he didn't do any media, and people loved him. But he is a unique talent, right? And, like, I think a lot of it's a fan base smart enough to know that the upside for him was huge. He's 6'7" and he can skate. And there's not a lot of guys that you will ever see play in the NHL who you can say those two things about.
So my lasting memory was the day in the locker room and also the final game. I mean, what a mic drop. He scores the final goal of the season for the Canucks. And that's it. He's done. Again, you were there in Edmonton. Like, late in that game, the new rink in Edmonton, they're getting ready for the playoffs, and they're chanting MVP, right? When McDavid got his 100th point. And there was a part of me that swore they were chanting BFG. Every time I heard that, he had just scored his goal, and I was thinking, BFG, BFG. And maybe one day those would be MVP chants. But again, those are the things that, I have to live with now. Those are my memories. That's what I'll keep close to my heart. And again, standing invitation when he comes back to Vancouver, when he returns to the National Hockey League. Hopefully the English is a little bit better, and we will work to get him on the podcast.
And I hope when he does come back, it's with the full support of the Canucks PR machine, that there's jerseys, that there's jerseys, that there's BFG t-shirts or something like that. I want to see a banner of him. Like,
on the outside of Rogers.
Yeah, I want him to feel, if he does come back, as loved and as comfortable as you could possibly feel a human. Like, I would even want, like, take down the Bure banner and put up a Trampkin. Like, we love you so much, Nikita. Like, look what we're doing here. You are everywhere. You are one of the faces of the franchise.
Now, in hindsight, had he accepted the organization's request to go to Utica for a couple of games, he would have played for Travis Green. He could have assessed the situation. He could have got a read on the new head coach, you know, the guy that was in waiting, and maybe things would have been different when the news came that Travis Green is, in fact,
Did it work with Pedan? How did it work with Pedan? Someone's going to have to walk me through how Pedan got worse, was a healthy scratch multiple times in the second half of the season, and another guy, huge guy, Russian guy, can skate guy, has seemingly right now been lost. So I'm not sure Trampkin necessarily would have fit into the new Green regime. I do know that for Travis Green, like, I don't think in the history of the Vancouver Canucks has a coach ever walked into this organization with the bar as low as it is. Like, I even heard people talking, like, if he can get to 75 points, it'll be a great job well done. No longer do wins and losses and points matter. It's how does he develop the young players.
And his promotion, again, continues what has been, you know, such a consistent stretch here for management. And it even goes back to the hiring of this management group. But when Trevor Linden took over, like, it was clear from day one that Jim Benning was going to be the general manager of the Vancouver Canucks.
Right.
Jim Benning became the general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. A few weeks later, Willie DeJardin, you know, all signs pointed to Willie being the head coach of the Canucks. Sure enough, check that box. And there have been others, and, you know, last summer, if it wasn't Lucic, it was going to be Erickson. Didn't get Lucic, so they get Erickson. And again, absolutely zero surprise.
Well, and I heard, I was doing crossover with Sakaris today, and he said, like, this is the courage of convictions of the front office. And I couldn't help but think, like, like a lot of these decisions haven't worked out. Like maybe they should, you know, rethink when they get tunnel. Because Ulevi was the same thing. It was like in January. They were drafting a defenseman, and if Ulevi is there, it's going to be Ulevi. Like maybe Vertanen was the same way. He's the guy from Abbotsford, power forward. We need that guy. Like maybe that's not the best tunnel vision direction for this front office. Like maybe they do need a couple extra voices around to say, well, hold on, guys. Like, is this the right? Are we sure? Like, just an are we sure guy.
I think
that could help the front office.
Let's go off the board for a change. Not a lark, because you got to make sure that you get the right guy. And clearly they figure that Travis Green is that. I do wonder, though, when you're running a multi-million dollar company the way they are, like, and you're 29th, like, there's nowhere to go but up. Like, what would the danger be in bringing in another advisor, a guy with some solid NHL experience? You pay him $1 million. You know, I mean, we're talking about a percent of your overall, you know, expenditures. If you're worried about penny pinching and that, I mean, bring in a senior advisor. Why? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, what you've been doing hasn't been working for you. So why wouldn't you bring in a fresh set of eyeballs that has some experience in the NHL with a proven track record?
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people are going to point to Ken Holland and how long is he for that job he's in now, and could he potentially fit in Vancouver? But I'm not even going that. Like, I'm just a guy. He doesn't even have to have NHL experience. He just has to come in and say, guys, are we sure? And he would always present the opposite. Like, maybe we should draft Tkachuk, and here's why. Like, he would just present them at least with the alternative, because I don't think in a lot of these decisions – the alternative is seriously considered. In fact, I know it wasn't with Ulevi over Tkachuk, and that may work out. But Travis Green, another one, if they really didn't interview another guy, like how, I think like when I saw you, one of the first things you said to me today was how interesting you find it that there's these huge polarizing opinions on Travis Green, like the greatest hire ever. Or this guy's the worst thing ever. Can't develop anyone.
How?
The reality, no one. And it's the point you made. First thing, like, no one knows. He's been a professional coach for 4 years. No one knows. And in the front office, if they had the Are We Sure guy, he could say, like, okay, like, I understand you want a young coach with a young team, but are we sure that this is the guy?
The wait a sec guy. Wait a sec. Wait a sec. And look, Travis Green, in my dealings with him, the times I've interviewed him, training camps, when I've been around him, engaging guy, played in the National Hockey League, just under 1,000 games. So, you know, he's got NHL experience in that sense that Willie Desjardins didn't have. But I am still a little bit surprised that, you know, when a management group comes in, generally they get one coaching fire. They get to play that card. And they did that with Willie D. And I kind of thought that this group wouldn't hang its hat on another inexperienced guy. But as I have had some time to digest it here this morning, you know, I want to look at it as this is another signal that they realize the long haul, how much work they've got to do. If you bring in an NHL coach, an NHL-ready coach, you know, he's going to want to win right away, and this team's not going to win. And so,
I think on the contract. Like, the Leafs gave Babs a huge contract, and they said, like, look, winning is not the priority. We're developing a team here. So I don't think you can just discount the possibility that you could bring a veteran coach in here and say, the directive for this team is not to win a Stanley Cup right now. The directive is to develop these young. I think that it at least should have been considered as a possible option. Cause I have seen the young coaches, like the Aikens and the Scott Arneal, like the young coach with the young team, it doesn't always work out.
Right.
It's not a slam dunk that this is the right way to rebuild.
And I've heard the name Dallas Eakins brought up an awful lot.
He's the poster child for, like, failed expectations, right? Like, bring in the bright, young, like, everyone in Toronto loved Eakins. And they said, like, this is, like, home run pick. This is the guy going to be a great coach. People assume that he was brought into a good situation in Edmonton. Certainly, they had a lot of young talent, and it totally flopped.
I'm fascinated, and we'll get an answer tomorrow when Travis Green's introduced. you know, and I'm hoping to be there, and I'd like to ask him, like, what does he think he has to work with here? You know, there are only 31 head coaching jobs. Again, we talked about the dots were connected there, so it's not a surprise. He's had some time to look at this roster, you know, from afar, being in the organization. He has a sense of some of the personnel, but when you're 29th and with the worst special teams in the National Hockey League, like, what does he truly think? Like, what excites him about this job in the next 24 months? Because I think there is a ton of pain still to come for the Vancouver Canucks. You talk about, you know, 75. That would be a 6-point bump for the Vancouver Canucks. Like, right. That would be, you know, absolutely.
That's way to, a great yeah, accomplishment.
Way
that.
To go. And, you know, he'll give you the platitudes, I'm sure. But deep down, like, I wonder, what does he see? Like, how much work does he think he has ahead of him here to get the Canucks? You know, have they hit rock bottom? I don't know that. Like, again, I think next year is going to be every bit as difficult as this past one was. I think there'll be some different challenges. You know, there are some young guys that give you a little bit of hope that weren't really around and that weren't on the roster this past season. But I'm curious what he thinks he's getting himself into here as the head coach.
I do, Canucks. Like, he knows the team inside out. Like, I think he's coming into this eyes wide open, and the four-year deal for a guy of his professional experience is, that's a pretty good deal. I'm not sure that he got the money maybe that he wanted, but the 4 years, it brings some decent security with it. And you're right, it's a fair question, because if things do fail here and they don't go well and there's not improvement after 2 years, I think we all agree he's going to get two no matter what, right?
Oh, sure.
Right. And if there's not improvement after those two and things look disastrous, or at least the young prospects are trending the wrong way, and he loses his job, then it's unlikely he's going to get another chance in the NHL.
But as we said, I mean, these jobs are scarce, so you're going to jump at the opportunity. And, right. You know, it sounded like other teams, Florida perhaps, some interest in him. And maybe that once Florida starts sniffing around, maybe the Canucks realize, like, we better make something happen here, get it done. Because late last week, the questions were, why is this taking so long? Well, here we are, not even midweek, and they're going to make the announcement tomorrow.
But why does he get pinned with Doug Jarvis? Like, that's like, why keep, for a team that totally fell apart, and the Canucks absolutely fell apart in the second half of last season, and Jarvis was the guy brought in to fix the defensive systems and help on the power play, and neither of those things were a rousing success after the first four games. It all looked great 4 games in, but after that, it did not.
Like, but even it didn't in 4 games, because they never had the lead. No, like, they were always playing catch up.
They were giving a lot of score. Like, you could make the argument, like, the systems are kind of working out. Like, Ryan Miller's not facing all these odd man rushes. In the second half of the season, there is no way you can make that argument. Like, I have never seen a goalie under fire like Ryan Miller was the last 6 weeks. It was just breakdown after breakdown after breakdown. And yeah, there were a couple of injuries, but not enough that you would think would make a huge significant difference. So I wonder, like, why Doug Jarvis? Like, why he had influence on the power play? The power play was god awful. Like, there was no one that could critically look at that power play and say, like, there was anything smart about it, anything effective about it, and certainly it wasn't successful.
Well, and Travis Green ultimately will have the say there. I mean, Doug Jarvis was down on the bench. Are they going to bump him up to the eye in the sky, where Perry Pern spent a fair bit of this past season? Apparently Nolan Baumgartner is coming in, not a surprise, sort of the way that Willie brought Doug Lidstra along with him, but they're going to have to hire somebody else. I mean, most coaching staffs have a head coach and 3 assistant coaches, two on the bench and 1 up above, and I wonder, will that be a switch that they make? I thought it was fascinating reading Elliot Friedman's 30 thoughts this morning. And he had, you know, I think it was thought number 14. Bob Woods is a name that probably doesn't mean a whole lot to a lot of people. Assistant coach in Buffalo. They're in the process of cleaning house. His contract is up. Buffalo had the top power play in the National Hockey League this year. Like, to me, that's the kind of guy. Like, look around the hockey world. Find somebody that's doing, you know,
Like the Noah Brown type.
Yeah, innovative things on the power play. And yeah, he's got Eichel and he's got Evander Kane. And he probably had a few, you know, better parts to work with. But still, we're talking about a guy who was in charge of the top power play in the National Hockey League. If he becomes a free agent as a coach, like, why wouldn't you
grab him,
take a long look at a guy like that and bring him in? And you know, whether it's Bob Woods or, you know, find me the guy that maybe Travis Green knows, the guy that's running the best power play in the American Hockey League. Like, if they want to go with a younger staff, but like, I use the word disrupt. Like, break whatever they've been doing here hasn't been working.
Right.
Do it so find some ways to disrupt the system here and bring in some people from the outside. So I'll be curious. I mean, that's going to be an interesting hire. How much clout Travis going to have to make that? How much it's going to be in concert with the organization? Because last year, when they bring in an assistant coach, you know, they bring in a guy who, Doug Jarvis was a terrific player and won Stanley Cups, but he's in his 60s now. Now you've got Travis Green, who's 46 or 47, and Nolan Baumgartner a few years younger than that. You know, there's a bit of an age gap there. Where will they go to round out the coaching staff? Just be interested to see how that
one plays because out. One of their main goals is to be, like, to not, basically it amounts to this. This is the Canucks front office. We don't want a team that loses 4-1 every night. So if you don't want, like, one of the areas that I think we all see as the one you could improve without playing terrible trap it up hockey, you improve that power play, which, I mean, it should be improvable, no? Like
yeah, absolutely. Move a couple of pieces around there. And again, I mean,
yeah, if you get the right coach for that power play, you should have an average run of the mill 15th, 16th overall ranked power play. And it should alleviate some of that concern about getting blown out all the time.
Should that be one of my questions to Travis tomorrow? Travis, are you prepared to ride a power play at 12%? Oh, well. But I would be curious. And again, I mean, he's not going to bring out the whiteboard and drop X's nose, but you know, I wonder if he has confidence in himself looking at what he's inheriting. Can he breathe some new life into this power play? Because you know that the Twins are going to be a part of it. Their role should be reduced somewhat, but they're still going to be a part of it. Henrik's going to go to his familiar spot on the ice, and you know that's kind of where it all breaks down from there.
Like when Newell Brown was in charge, and I brought this up to Willie at the end, and he looked at me like I had three heads. But I said when Newell Brown was here, there was a lot of flow to that power play, and they moved the Sedins to different sides of the ice. They moved Henrik Sedin around, and it created space. And I asked him, like, did you ever? Like, it was so hard extracting answers from Willie on this power play. But did you ever, like, look at old videos of what happened when they did work with, like, four left shot guys or three other left shot guys? Or did you ever look at it when Newell Brown's power play had all this, like, great flow with the Twins? And he essentially said, no, he didn't bother with it. He was happy with the setup and, you know, just didn't get the results, which is unacceptable.
Right. And they might have been the only team in organized hockey that didn't score on a one-timer with some guy on his off wing, you know, like the Radim Verbata or Ryan Kessler when he set up in that circle. Again, that's Jordan Subban's spot. and I am curious to see, like, you know, what does this mean for some of these guys? Because this is the knock on Travis Green from afar. And again, too soon to be rendering any kind of final verdict on this guy. But when you look at what the Canucks are getting themselves into, it's, all right, they're 29th in the league. They've got to develop these young players. He's going to have some young players to work with. What kind of job did he do down in Utica? And that's where the detractors are going to say, and you mentioned Pedan, and Jordan Subban's name comes up, and Jake Virtanen, and the list goes on and on. Hunter Shinkarik. You know, Alex Grenier was a guy that looked like
he had Jensen. Grenier.
Yeah. And you know, varying degrees of success. And some of these guys have had a look at the NHL. Some haven't had their chance yet. But, you know, his supporters will say, he had nothing to work with. Like there were, but we just listed a bunch of guys that, you know, had some talent that were able to play in the AHL. And he really hasn't been able to further their careers to make them National Hockey Leaguers. Right. And people will say Thatcher Demko and Jacob Markstrom. And I say, I'm in the camp that doesn't believe a head coach can take credit.
Yeah, goalies are tough.
They're a different breed. Yeah.
And so I don't, Demko's a long way from being a finished product. Like, I honestly think that they want him in the A for another couple of years. So that one's tough to say. I do think he helped Markstrom and he rode Markstrom to the Calder Cup finals and all of that. That's great. I would actually give him a W for that one. Definitely a W for Berchi. He had, you know, coached him at different places and he's one of the big, he is one of the biggest believers in Berchi I've ever come across. And it turned out he was right. And I think you got to give him a W there. Gaunce, I'm kind of on the fence with. Gaunce, like, did perform, scored well, in the AHL, but came to Vancouver. And although he did play well, has not produced a lot of offense. So if you can't really hang your hat on a Gaunce development, right? And the one that concerns me the most out of them all is Shinkarik. And it's also the one I know the most about. And I remember when Shinkarik first arrived And he was super dynamic. Like, just like,
I remember that preseason.
Edge of your seat. Yeah. And it was the young stars, but when he was playing with Bo and they were dominating possession and doing like creating great scoring chances. And that first training camp, he was great. And the first preseason, he was really, really good. And it was like, okay, this guy's close. Like, maybe a lot of us were even saying, like, maybe he should make the team now. And then he went down to the minors, and then he was on a fourth line, and then he wasn't on the power play a lot. Then he was on the fourth line a lot. He was in the bottom six all the time. He never got the opportunity, or very rarely in that first year, got the opportunity to play in the top six. And mentally, it was really, really hard on him. And there are some guys that that's going to work with. And I think that the way he coaches worked well with Berchi, it did not work well with Shinkarak. And I wonder, like, you know, again, there's not a lot of evidence that we can point to on either side, but I wonder how he's going to work with like the Goldobins and these other guys that are kind of the key to the success. You know, I called, like, I was talking to Benny the other day, and he gave me basically the score four. He said, like, you want to know where the scoring's going to come from. Here are the four guys. It's going to be Besser, Goldobin, Dallin, and Gaudette. Those are the guys. That's the future guys that are coming that are going to give the team that's already there, Granlin, Berchi, Horvat, all these guys. Those are the guys that's going to lift this team up in scoring. So the score four, how is Travis going to get the score four to flourish offensively? And I think that that's his biggest challenge. And it's been the hardest thing for him. He hasn't had a lot of success with getting offensive guys to shine offensively.
And the score four, not to be confused with the garage sale seven, right? These are two distinct groups. Right. In fact, on a spectrum, they are at totally different ends. But okay, score four. I'll work with that, and we'll see where it goes. Pat Cast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. It is truck month for the remaining days of the month of April. You can get up to $10,500 total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to EagleRidgeGM.com for full details. I've seen a lot of people wonder, all right, Trampkin wasn't happy here. There was language issues and some trust. Where does this leave Goldie now as the lone Russian in the locker room? Any concerns at all? Played junior hockey over here, so he's been in North America for a while, speaks the language. Likes the hair. We know that. Any concerns as a lone wolf in that locker room?
If I am the Canucks right now, I am having a holy shit moment when Trampkin leaves. And I am rethinking everything when it comes to Russian players. And I think it was, Tony making the point, you know, Gallagher made the point over the past couple of days that you have to treat the Russian players differently. You may not like it. You may be pissed off about it. But they're yours. That's your asset, right? You either drafted them, either paid a premium and traded for one, but they're your guys. It's up to you to make it work. And now it's up to the Canucks to make Goldobin work. He's got all kinds of talent. He's got talent for days. And I love like he's kind of like, yeah, a lot of people talk about the grit and is he gritty enough? Can he play a two-way game? Like what I focus on the positives, man. I see a guy that's always in and around the net, like thinking, always. You can almost watching him play, watch him think, you know, how do I better position myself to get in an area where I'm going to be able to receive a puck and put it in the net? They need that type of talent, right? And if I'm the Canucks and I got him on my score four, so I've got him as the future of these four guys that are going to aid in the scoring, I am doing everything I can, bending over backwards. Heck, like someone made the point at some point along the way, I think it was one of the callers I was on, show on, like get a Russian guy up as a depth forward. Have a Russian guy, as you know, in your fourth line. The Canucks could have had Panan as one of their seventh or eighth defensemen this past season who could have helped Trampkin. I would be looking at that. Everything I could to make him as happy as possible. If he wants his own, wherever that barber works, is he in Vancouver or is he in San Jose? Like hire that guy and get him a job at some Aquilini shop, like right around, because he loves to get his hair cut. Have the guy, like I'd open buy one of those like little taco stands that are around the arena.
Right.
Tear out the taco stand, put in a barber shop, bring his guy from San Jose and go like, look, dude, for the next 6 years, we're going to be paying you $75,000 a year and you are going to be cutting Goldobin's hair. And you know, everything else is like gravy. You can take all the profits you want from, you know, if he wants to recommend you on Twitter and the place is lined up.
but you're our guy. Like, they have to think like that way. They have to make Goldobin as happy as possible.
We'll call it Goldilocks and everybody's happy, right? Like, there you go. We already got a name for it.
Genius. Yeah, like that, I want a piece of it right now.
Buying stock in Goldilocks hair shop.
Like, I don't want, like, with Trampkin, the Canucks would say, like, you guys are the only guys talking about Trampkin. Like, that shouldn't be the attitude. The Canucks' attitude should be, yeah, like, everyone should be talking about Goldobin's incredible. Of course you guys are talking about him all the time. He's unbelievable. And we love this guy. Get him. Does he want a new car every month? Like, what does he want? Like,
we gotta find out.
Whatever the guy wants.
Make it happen. Now, the guy that was traded to San Jose to get Goldie, Yannick Hansen. Do you see how it ended for him?
I know. I think he was hurt, though. I saw you, like, pointing out he didn't play. Like, he just never, after the knee injury, and he came back from the knee injury, he never looked like Yannick Hansen again. Right. And then he suffered an injury with the Sharks, where there was a shoulder or something. He got hurt. He missed a couple of games. I saw, like, it was the shadow of Yannick Hansen. That just did not look, there's no way that was a healthy Yannick Hansen. He was losing puck battles. You could tell he was really hesitant along the boards. That wasn't the dogged Dane that I had come used to seeing at his best in Vancouver. So I'm really intrigued to see what he does next year. Because I was super disappointed, but I think he was one of the guys, like, San Jose had a lot of injuries. And I think that he was one of the guys that was playing hurt at the end. And I think he missed like 6 weeks with the knee injury, like in the middle of the season. Like, that's really hard for a player, especially one whose entire game is based on speed, to come back from. And I never honestly saw, there were a couple of flashes in a couple of games. I think like his fourth or fifth game after he came back from the knee injury kind of looked like Yannick of old, but I never saw that guy. Like, was there ever once a spot when you were watching those playoff games where Yannick Hansen was whizzing by some guy? I think he had maybe one breakaway attempt early in the series. I think maybe the first game he had a partial breakaway that he missed
on.
But other than that, like, I didn't see a lot of the old Yannick Hansen that
no, you're right, because I tweeted out at the time that I missed Hansen breakaways. But so does he. but it was sort of, it took me back to a time and place where he used his speed to put himself in those positions. We can make fun of the fact that he didn't have a ton of finish early on in his Canuck days, but his speed allowed him to constantly get behind defenses and get those breakaway attempts. I want to ask you a little bit about, and I know you've paid some attention to Toronto and Washington. I look at a guy like Tom Wilson, who was a first round pick.
Right.
A guy who had 7 goals in the regular season each of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And then became a fourth. Like, his overtime goal was sketchy. It's a goal that probably shouldn't have gone in. But he scored it, and it was a big goal for the Toronto, or for the Washington Capitals early in that series. But do you think Jake Virtanen could be kind of player? Like, 7 goals in the regular season, but then, you know, when this team gets to where it wants to go, he can be a physical force in games that matter.
You're so on point with this one. Like, people around the NHL, like, were texting me during that series, and he was 16th overall in 2012. And, like, you're saying it as a positive thing. They were saying kind of as a negative thing, saying, like, Tom Wilson is Virtanen's top end. Like, now that they believe that was, like, the people who think Virtanen's going to walk into the NHL, be a top six guy, and score 25 goals a game, are lost right now, and that people should be hoping he becomes Tom Wilson. And I'm not sure that that's the greatest compliment that you want from a fifth overall pick, but I tend to agree with both sides. Like, I think that Virtanen can become a Tom Wilson. I'm also not sure that can be viewed as a super negative right now. I think that people should be positioning themselves to prepare for Virtanen to be like a middle, like, third line player. And I think that it, again, lower those expectations.
Exactly. That bar is coming down.
And you'll be happier if you do.
But I thought Wilson was good in the playoffs.
He was really good. And that's, you're right. Like, Virtanen can be that guy. Could be a guy who scores 8, 9, maybe 25 points during the season, and then blows up for a couple of playoff games. You know, Tom Wilson, Zach Cassian, not to bring him up again, but that's the kind of guy that Virtanen can be. For sure he can be that.
Because for me, Tom Wilson, and again, your first round pick, yeah, you want to believe that there's a ton of offense there. But I watched him in that series, and I mean, I was captivated by that series. for a number of reasons. One is just the speed at which it was played. And I think I enjoyed the first round of the playoffs because what we had been force-fed here for the last 82 games and really seasons, like, it's not NHL hockey when you see it played on that stage at that level. But Wilson became a guy that, like, the Leafs knew when he was on the ice. Every time, like, you know, he finishes checks, he's in the middle of things after the whistle, you know, across the line from time to time, but I don't mind that. And again, like, I think maybe he enjoys the physical side of the game more than Jake does at this stage. I think, like, again, I think the Canucks have to be careful here because they wanted Pramkin to become Pronger.
Right.
You know, like, they have to be careful knowing exactly what they've got in Jake Virtanen.
Okay, yeah, but Pronger is, like, that's ridiculous to me. Like,
no question.
Like, one of the greatest players of all time who has, like, this crazy unique style and aura and way of, like, no one ever can be Chris Pronger. But everyone always, because the guy's tall and he's a defenseman, right. Oh, you can be like Chris Pronger. No, he can't. But if you were to show Jake Virtanen a video of Tom Wilson and said, dude, you can be like this, I think that that's a totally reasonable expectation and a totally reasonable way for Jake to play. My concern with Jake, you know, watching Utica this year was that physicality element, which was so evident, especially early in that first year with the young stars when he pounds Connor McDavid and the Edmonton media is all up in arms about it. And like, should he be doing that? Early on, there was a lot of games where early in the game, he would be hunting for a big hit. And a lot of times he landed them and they would have an impact. I haven't seen a lot of that in Utica. It seems to have evaporated. I want my Jake Virtanen hitting. I want my Jake Virtanen being physical. I want Jake Virtanen in and around the net and bullying guys off and using his strength and positioning to score dirty rebound goals. I haven't seen a lot of that this year.
Am I wrong coming at the playoffs, though? Like, it's been like a revelation to me.
Oh, it's just like the skies lifted, man. It was like, you forget, like, because we get stuck in this bubble of watching the Canucks. You know,
try to defend a one goal deficit.
Yeah. you watch, you know, and you forget what playoff hockey can be and how great the sport can be. Like, I'm having these moments watching these games. And there was that one night where like four of them went to overtime. Right. And it was like, I had just come to the sport again, fresh and new and wow, this is what the world can look like. Like, that's what it used to look like that for us.
Yep.
All the time. Like, you know, I was talking about this before within the last few weeks, how in that run of 2009 to 2012, you'd watched, for instance, just the Sedins, and you'd be like, holy shit, like, that's freaking incredible. Like, you'd look at the guy beside you and your jaw would drop.
Right.
You wouldn't say a word, and you both knew, like, that, what we just saw was incredible. And you would say that, like, three or four times a game sometimes. And even when it was some crappy opponent back then, like the Oilers, I was excited about every game. And it was like the Oilers. I'm excited about this because I know the Sedins are going to run train on these guys and they're going to, you know, just dominate them. We're going to see some incredible plays. Like, I'd look so forward even when they played the Flames and Oilers and all these crappy teams. And now, you're hoping to see one, like, a Trampkin hit, you know, a nice goal, a toe drag from Bo that works. Like, it's just so little that we have to, so many morsels, like just morsels of food that we cling to, that when we had the opportunity to watch playoff hockey and watch it all and absorb it all in, it was like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Yeah, I couldn't get enough. And but the number of times, and we saw it a ton, like there were a ton of overtimes, which was terrific, but there were so many times that teams were down two and were able to come back. And they got down two, and instead of worrying about getting down three, you know, they hit the turbo booster and upped their game and tried. They knew they had to get back in these games. And it was just like wild to see teams mounting comebacks instead of holding on, not wanting to fall behind any further, and then hoping against all hope that you were going to get a late goal to somehow squeeze a game into overtime to get that single point. We always talked about the single point throughout the regular season.
Boys.
But these teams that were down two, like, they found another level because they had to. And to me, that was just the momentum shifts and the swings in these games. Like, it was just, it was all stuff that we didn't experience here in Vancouver throughout the regular season.
Like, if you think, like, not one of these series in the first round went to game seven, and it was still an incredible first round of hockey. Like, I had a,
Like, I didn't leave, like, I wish there, obviously, I wish there was a game seven, but I don't leave that first round wanting for entertainment. Like, color me entertained, like, almost every single game. And in that night that four of the games went into overtime, there were multiple, multi-goal comebacks in all of them. I think all of them had, like, two-goal comeback in them somewhere. So, but you know, you do realize things are not getting any better under Travis Green. Like, things, he's more willy than willy. Like, things are going to get, they may get tied down even more, right? Like, Willie was a super aggressive before this past couple of years. He was an aggressive coach. Like, Travis is not that.
You've got me cowering under the table here now. No, we just talked about great hockey. No, a couple other things before we finish up here. One is, second round provides some really intriguing matchups. Obviously, Burroughs against AV, so there'll be some storylines here in Vancouver. Penguins and the Capitals, I mean, that could be a Stanley Cup final if they could meet in the Stanley Cup final, you know, the top two teams in the regular season. Do you like, which holds more intrigue to you, Penguins, Capitals, or Kessler, McDavid, Anaheim, Edmonton?
Oh, man. I'd probably go the Caps. Pens series. Like, I don't really tire of Crosby versus Ovechkin. Man, that you're right. Like, Kessler versus McDavid's going to be a great matchup. I think you could pick either one and then you're not going
to
be wrong.
Cause I thought the Sharks, and they're not really built that way, and they got to the Stanley Cup final last year built that way, but like, I thought they made it pretty easy on McDavid in his first series in the National Hockey League playoffs.
I mean, they got under his skin. Like, Couture was getting under his skin a bit. I mean, that Sharks team was a depleted team.
They were
super injured. So, like, you know, obviously everyone knows now about Thornton's knee and the MCL and the ACL. Like, that puts a ton more pressure on Pavelski and Couture, not having Thornton to kind of lean on. And so having them, like, think about what they're trying to balance. Like, I got to score, and I also have to try to stop the most dynamic player in the league. And McDavid is that. Like, McDavid is really, Kessler's going to have his hands full trying to stop him. He's as close to being like a guy who can carry a team LeBron-esque as there is anyone in the NHL, and watching him create stuff all on his own. I can't help it. Like, there should have, like, really that year, only the Sabres were outwardly tanking to try to get him. Like, there should have been like 10 teams clearing out their rosters just a 10% chance of getting him, because he is a game changer for the next 10 to 15 years. Like, it's crazy to think the Canucks were almost in a position to tank for McDavid, and they said, nah. You know?
But isn't that the frustration, don't you think, for Canuck fans, is watching the Leafs? They're just on the ramp to, like, absolutely take off here.
Yeah, it sucks for everyone in
the
league.
And the Oilers as well.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, people crapped all over me because on Saturday night I tweeted out, like, the Canucks were 0-5 against the Sharks.
Right.
The Oilers just beat the Sharks 4-5.
Right.
Like, I was just trying to, like, to me, that sort of
indicates.
Why were
people all over you for that?
Because I was picking random numbers, and you can't, you know, oh, but the Canucks had success against Anaheim, so that means not. I was just trying to point out, look, five attempts against the Sharks. Canucks were schooled by the Sharks. Oilers just, they lost the first game of the series and then won 4-5 against same San Jose team, and at playoff time as well. I was just trying to point out the fact that there's this massive gap between the Canucks 100%. And where the Oilers are
now. And you're totally on point to point that out. And anyone, just pick any series. Like, I'm watching Anaheim-Calgary, and I'm thinking, like, wow, like, these teams are so far advanced than where the Canucks are. Like, this is big boy hockey. And the Canucks are a long, 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 long way from getting there. And I don't care what series you want to pick out, what game you want to pick out. If you're not watching that thinking, oh my God, like, the Canucks, they need a lot just to get into the arena with these teams in the playoffs. I don't know what you're watching. Like, you're out of your mind. And that's why I push, like, trading a Tanev, because they do need a ton more. Like, the score four is great, but you need one or two of those guys may not work out. Like, you need a lot of guys. Like, you need to build an army, right? Like, you need to compete against McDavid and all these guys.
All right. So finish up, because the big event now after the coach is draft lottery on Saturday. What represents a win for you, for the Vancouver Canucks,
Hold serve.
In the draft lottery?
Hold serve. They were the second worst team in the NHL. It sucked watching that team play. We went over it. From January, mid-January on, they were the worst team in hockey. They have earned one of the top two picks. And if they don't get it, the system sucks, all of that. It's flawed. It's rigged. I don't care. Like, you just can't have a system where the worst teams in hockey don't get the top picks. They honestly, they came by the second worst in hockey, honestly. Like, they were really trying to make the play. This is not a team that was tanking to try to get a top pick. In fact, no one was really tanking this year because the prize at the end, the treasure chest at the end of the rainbow, isn't that great. Like, it's nice. Would be nice to get one of those centers. The Canucks deserve to get one of those centers. They deserve to get one of those top two picks. There has been way too much suffering for the Vancouver Canucks to be drafting fifth overall and be looking at, like, should we draft a defenseman or one of these centers who may be good in a few years? They deserve a guy who's going to play in the fall.
Okay, but if they do tumble and they fall out of those top two spots,
four.
If they had,
four is a big loss.
If they had, wait a sec, guy. Do you see a wait a sec?
Yeah.
Do you see a way they could be creative at the draft
and trying to trade up?
Trying to do something.
I'm not sure that this draft is trying to trade up, but if I am the wait a sec guy, I'm saying, guys, let's, like, you look what the Coyotes did last year when they traded back into the first round. Everyone said, oh, they paid a huge premium with Detroit to get Chychrun, who fell. But it worked out great. Like, they got a good young defenseman who played like 68 games for them this year and looked really good.
Well, and they got Clayton Keller too. They
right.
got two
early.
Yeah.
That's right. So what I'm saying is take the pick early. And then if I'm the wait a sec guy, I'm like, wait a sec. I know you guys don't want to trade Chris Tanev, but how about we trade Tanev in one of these second round picks and we try to get ourselves back into the first round for a guy that's falling who we had high on our board in the mid, you know, in the mid to late round. And then we can get our top five pick and a mid-round guy. And all of a sudden, you know, you add to the army. Like, you add to the army. Because Tanev is going to age out. Like, he's not only 27 now. He's an old, like, he's getting injured a lot.
Sure, no, there's miles there. Time. Yeah.
I'd be looking to unload. And I would also be worried that the more he gets hurt over the next couple of years, the less his value is going to be. There's no restrictions on him trade-wise right now. You could trade him anywhere. They've never had that. Never, I don't think... In the Benning era, have they, like, had a big veteran asset that they could trade without a no trade clause? He's done well. Like, he's definitely traded, especially at the deadline, got a couple of really good prospects. Two of the score four, they just arrived 6 weeks ago. I'm the wait a sec guy. I'm saying, wait a sec. I know you don't want to compete and I know you want Chris Tanev around, but look who we can get in the middle of the first round.
We'll wait a week, and we'll see what we have to chat about next week on the podcast. Let's finish up. Where do the lottery balls leave the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday?
I think they're going to be drafting two. Like, they have earned this two. They have earned number two overall.
Yeah, but didn't they earn three last year? And they got five. So
yeah.
It's been 50 years of this botch. I think there are a lot of people that feel that way, that, you know, it's Canucks. It's just not going to happen for them.
But at some point, things are going to go. Everyone, every dog, like the Cubs win the World Series, like every dog has its day, and this is the one. No, it's got to be two. Come on.
Send Travis Green in to represent the Canucks. He's kind of hitting the jackpot
here.
I want
him watching video. I don't want, like, people are saying, like, Travis Green should be at the draft. Like, he should be.
Get
on it. Yeah.
Get to work.
Like, Torts in his year didn't show up till, like, 2 days before training camp. And then he's like, hey, I'm here. Let's go. Like, Travis Green has a ton of work, and it's not great work ahead of him. He needs to start now.
Figure that power play. I remember when Torts was introduced and it was just ahead of the draft that I asked him, are you going to be at the draft on the week? No. You know, he scoffed at me like, what would I do at the draft? Like, are you kidding me? I got dogs to walk, whatever. No, I'm not going to the draft. So
yeah, I saw Babcock's going to the World Championship. He's scouting guys. Like, if Travis Green should be scouting or looking free agent, I don't know what it is he should be doing. I do know what he should not be doing is being in Toronto at the draft lottery. And I don't care all the media in the world is there. I don't care. I want him studying, watching video, figuring out what Goldobin needs. Like, whatever it is, I want him doing it. And it's all game-related, team-related, not lottery luck-related.
Maybe he'll be at the podium tomorrow on an iPad already breaking down film as he's answering questions. Just a sec, I'll get to him. Breaking down film here. I thought, like, it's never going to happen in a million years. But if the Canucks marketing department was on it, I would have him come out in a green Lycra suit. And, you know, the Green Man, come on, like, work with me here. Like, bring the real Green Man and then convince him to come out in the suit as well. And it would be like, you remember the game show To Tell the Truth, where they'd have like three contestants and they would all tell the same story and the panelists had to figure out who was the actual,
the real Green.
Yeah. Well, the real Travis Green, please stand up. And then he could bust out of the green suit and we could go.
How many times did you scratch Jordan Subban?
Yeah, exactly. That kind of, hey, how Harold Ballard made Roger Nielsen come out with a bag over his head when they rehired him. Come on, got to have a little fun with things. PatCast, as always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everyone is a part of their hockey family. Botch, as always, good stuff. Big week for the Vancouver Canucks. They get their head coach. Draft lottery on Saturday. We'll do it all again next week, break it down, and see what the next 7 days bring. It is the PatCast here on Province Radio.